Hi everyone, and welcome to the Rexilon podcast. I'm Kirby Lachrunji.
And I'm Dawn Riddler. Every week we bring you the highlights, lowlights, and musings around the global econo-political environment that we feel might impact on your wealth.
Welcome to week number 11. This week we're talking markets, TikTok, China's Belt and Road Initiative, which we may have some facts that you might not have been aware of, real estate, PPI out in the United States, CPI, which is also out in the United States, and then we're going to talk a little bit about earnings that are busy culminating in the United States and what that means for markets. Dawn, just to start off quickly, here's the markets. S&P 500 for the week up 1.24%, so we're higher again. Year to date now, S&P 500 is up 8.35%, and for the year is up 31.82%. Not as good as the NASDAQ, which is up 41.56% for the year, and just for the week up 0.91%. If we go across to the Euro Stoxx 50, for the week, that is up 1.85%. For the 12 months, up 19.79%. And then we're going to be talking quite a bit about China a little bit later on. Even that has turned the corner. So Shanghai index up 0.13% on the week. Dow Jones Shanghai up 0.55% for the week. Those over the 12 months continue to be in negative space. If you're investing in Bitcoin, $67,979 for a Bitcoin at the moment. The rand dollar at 1875. Most people that when the rand went above 19, Dawn said to me, will we ever see below 19? Yes, we will. Here it is, 1875. Rand against the euro, 2042. Against the great British pound, 23.90. And that's basically where markets are this week, continuously pushing higher, Dawn, with good quality companies just, you know, escalating in value. And I don't think we're going to see much different happening in markets this year. We might see some sideways happening in markets. That really depends on where earnings are going to go. But, you know, if things continue to play along the way they do and there's more liquidity into the system and so on, we're probably just going to see markets just trending higher.
Bobby, you know, I've said before and I'll say it again, with markets continuing to trend higher, even if they aren't, you know, at the sort of levels that we have been used to perhaps over the last 6 months, but certainly at a fairly robust level, you know, it's a good sign for the Democrats in the new election. I hate to see the end of NATO and all the other little sort of prize packets and brain droppings that are coming out of that orange head in the US.
Yeah. Dawn, it's quite interesting. This week, I looked at inflation in the United States, because inflation, obviously both PPI and inflation was out in the United States. PPI was reported at 1.6% year on year in February, slightly higher than what it was in January. And if one looks at CPI, that accelerated to 3.2% year on year from 3.1% year on year. Now, Dawn, one thing that you've always said, and we've spoken about this quite a lot on the podcast, is how inflation could actually be at a slightly more elevated level in the near-term future than just going back to this kind of long-term 2% average. So in this week's newsletter, I actually show a graph where we look at the long-term trend of US inflation. It shows you the one standard deviation movement of inflation in the United States and where it is at the moment. And I think there's almost a psychological thing happening in markets where Western investors are trying to get used to working with inflation. They haven't had to do so for a very long period of time. They've had to live with very anemic inflation, and now suddenly inflation is no longer anemic. And this is almost an environment that they're trying to get used to. What is the cost of capital? What will it be in 2 years and 3 years and 4 years time? How will I treat equities? Is dividends important? Is it not important? How important is bonds going to be going forward? And I actually think that once the whole issue around the bond yield curve has been sorted out with, you know, because they're basically refinancing the yield curve at the moment in the United States with just redemptions and trying to reissue new debt. But once all of that has sorted itself out, we might see the advent of the 60-40 portfolio again, 60% in equities and 40% in bonds. We might very well be seeing this again, because bonds can get you 3% then or 4%, you know, if one wants to buy, take on a little bit more risk. That doesn't seem at all to me far-fetched to go back to something that's more 60-40 type orientated, whereas the past 20 years has really just been an equity story. You know, you couldn't really be in bonds. You know, what kind of return were you going to get out of bonds? Very little.
I think the Western world, now that we've had inflation and at a fairly high level for well over a year now, you're starting to see the base effect, and people become used to the new prices because it doesn't look as bad. Yes, the prices, if you look back 3 or 4 years, you'll say, oh my God, it's double. But year on year, it's now slowing down and it's getting to a more manageable level. It's not up at the 10%, it might be down at the 3, 4%. And so you're getting less of a consumer outcry. And when you're getting less of a consumer outcry, there's less political pressure being brought on the Fed and on Biden and all the rest of it to actually bring down inflation. I mean, one of the things that Trump has been trying to say is that, inflation is all of inflation is Biden's fault, and petrol, when he was in power, gas, as they call it, when he was in power, was $1.75. It wasn't. It hasn't been $1.75 since 2013 or something. And they do per gallon, obviously, and not per liter, so it's not directly transferable. It was around about 3 when he came into power. Yes, it did rise, but it's come back down to the sort of peak level. And of course, Brent crude is fairly expensive at the moment. I mean, yes, America does produce its own, but that doesn't mean it's going to be cheaper at the pumps. You only get that in places like Saudi Arabia. In America, because it's a capitalist nation, you're going to get the market price is going to prevail in terms of, Brent and that. And when looking at the PPI, and I looked at it in the newsletter, it is those oil and oil products and energy products that
Correct.
still have got this residue of inflation in it that's pushing the PPI. Now, the PPI is really a measure of the middleman, somewhere between the sort of the raw manufacturing side of it and the consumer side of it. And it's a very good indicator. And there's still pressure there, which means there's still going to be ongoing pressure on inflation. And particularly in South Africa, I think we can almost write off an interest rate cut almost this year, maybe towards the end of the year, but we're not going to even start doing it before the states start doing it.
I mean, the big thing which has driven equities up to now is really a PE expansion. Earnings are hopefully now going to be catching up. And the big thing that I'm seeing happening in earnings and with companies, as soon as a company either guides, Dawn, they don't even have to guide lower. They just have to guide, slightly lower. They just have to say, listen, we just want to be conservative with our outlook here. We don't want to be, extravagant, with our outlook. And the stock price can be down 10%, 12% right there, because they're not giving the market what they believe is a fair assumption of the valuation that they are currently trading at. And this is the big issue with valuations at the moment, is that they are on the stretch side for many corporates, excluding what's happening at Nvidia, which has really just been on an absolute tear. Forget about all of that. Just look at the rest of the company complex. And in very simplistic terms, valuations are becoming stretched, and you need the earnings to be able to start justifying some of these valuations. You get that right, prices are just going to flatline for a bit and then start escalating again. I think that, broadly speaking, is what is going to happen in markets. But you might just bumble along for a bit in this year before you start taking off again, as far as prices are concerned. It's an interesting place.
Colby, I sort of equate it to the fact that maybe smart investors are sort of blowing the froth off some of these earnings to see what is underneath all that froth. How much of your beer is froth and how much of it, is actually drinkable.
It's
And
actual
sort of they're
liquid.
blowing off that froth before seeing whether they're going to carry on up. And as much as I think both you and I feel that this is maybe a little bit overheated, and long may it last until the 6th of November. I think 6th of November is the roundabout, and then Trump will tell him cheated again, and we'll have another, We live in interesting times, Corby. Let's face it. I'd
No,
much
we
rather the
never.
interesting times be this side of the pond than that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Talking about the other side of the pond, if we go right, we look at the Far East just for a moment. The Belt and Road Initiative in China has been a huge driver for the Chinese economy, but not only them, but also its subsequent filtration of wealth and what it's meant for African countries and developing countries across the world. I love the visual that you've got in the newsletter this week, Dawn, where you actually look at existing railways, planned and under construction railways, and it actually shows the economic belt and how that is actually developing over time. I mean, there's a vast amount of money that they've spent here in order to in some far-flung places in the world. And we haven't seen that from the Western world for a very, very, very long time in the developing world, right?
No, ab absolutely. And I mean, it is a form of neocolonialism. It's colonialism in a slightly different form. And unfortunately, you know, the T's and C's, the terms and conditions that come with it are perhaps nearly as noxious as they were during the colonial times, but that's a, you know, different thing. Where I sort of got the idea to look into this in more detail, sort of really going into the rabbit hole, is listening to a podcast that BBC does, BBC Global does, where they take one topic and do one topic every day, I think it is, during the weekdays, and do an in-depth dive into that topic. And they did an in-depth dive into the Panama Canal, which is very interesting because, you know, the Suez, you know, the other major canal is under pressure. You've got the Houthis trying to sink boats and this kind of thing. You had the that large container ship that actually blocked the Suez at a certain amount of time. But the Panama Canal is a very interesting story. And I've got a link there to the podcast if anybody wants to listen to it.
Yes.
But, you know, from an American standpoint, that Panama Canal is absolutely vital because obviously, you know, goods from China don't come around the Cape and go into America that way. They go through the Panama Canal through to the East Coast. Obviously, to the West Coast, they go straight across. But to the East Coast, they have to go through the Panama Canal there. So it's very interesting that the Panama Canal and how it was built and why it was built and the fact that it was started by the French and they couldn't make it work. They hadn't thought it through properly. And then, of course, the Americans did it. And the Americans gave up their lease. They had a lease on the Panama, which came due in 1999, rather than the same way that Hong Kong did. And they had to give it back over to the Panamanians. And it's their major source of income for Panama. It's is this Panama Canal. But because of the drought, because they use a system of locks to move the ships up and down, rather like unlike the Suez, which is just, you know, from the sea to the sea, and they dig a, you know, great big trench and it goes, it's all on one level. In the Panama Canal, they use a system of locks and it goes up into a large lake that and the boats kind of cross over and then they go down on the other side. It's a fresh water lake and the absolute feat of engineering that this was. But now, because they've had drought and it's a freshwater lake, it's not a sea level. The sea levels, you know, whatever happens to sea levels happens. They've had to throttle back the amount of traffic dramatically. And this is where the Belt and Road came in, is that, and this has been ongoing. I think this is the third year that this is happening. And now China and other countries as well are offloading on the one side and railroading the stuff across that Panama Strip to the other side, to ships on the other side, to get around this Panama problem. And, you know, that's where I picked up that the Belt and Road has actually got as far as South America. I mean, it doesn't even really show in the graphic that I put into the newsletter. It's very interesting. And obviously, you'd read it with mixed feelings because, you know, I'm not a fan of the Chinese. It's not considered lying. It's not considered dishonorable to pull one over on the Guaylo, us foreign devils, right? It's a game. It's honorable, in fact, to do that. So actually believing anything coming out of there.
Don't I mean, I find it interesting because, really speaking, there's a Western vacuum now in spending in developing countries. If one looks back over multiple decades, let's take from this the end of the Second World War, and one looks at Western spending in developing countries, one almost comes to the conclusion that there was mixed results. Perhaps there were places where there were some results, but in many, many cases, you know, it was really just a black hole where money disappeared down into, and that money is gone. China today is really taking up much of that slack. Now, it's quite interesting because you're right this week, Dawn, about the different types of loans that countries can make. The one is the Belt and Road Initiative. We've just spoken about that. The other one, obviously, which I think a lot of people would be familiar with, is IMF loans. But then there was one called Paris Club loans, which I wasn't entirely certain what that even was. I've never heard of it. And I mean, the Paris Club loan is basically a grouping of countries which are which is informal, but they tend to be more lenient. So if a country it cannot pay their debt, they seem to forgive debt or they restructure it in order to make sure that it becomes more lenient. And it was quite interesting because it's not just one type of funding model. Ultimately, though, the thing that makes a country go forward is a deep economic base. It's a democratic base, and the ability to be able to foster people in order to drive the system forward. And I suppose the success story of the last, let's go since the Second World War, the biggest success story there must be Singapore, surely.
Absolutely. And Singapore, I've been following Singapore. It's quite a restrictive environment. They're very strict about the hygiene and the cleanliness and neatness and everything of the city. So it's very Western, and to anybody coming from anywhere else in the world, they kind of go, oh my gosh, look how clean and neat and everything. And funnily enough, Rwanda has also taken a leaf out of that book. So if you go into Kigali, there's not a piece of paper, anything lying around. It's all neat. It's that sort of broken window syndrome that they try and do, which they did in New York, so that if it looks good, and then the people have more pride in what they're doing. But obviously, one of the where Singapore is sort of perhaps been raised in consciousness is the fact that the CEO of TikTok is actually a Singaporean. He's not, in fact, a Chinese. Now,
This is a Chinese, yeah.
I mean, you can talk about ByteDance from a from an investment perspective. This whole issue around this new bill that has been promulgated in the US has very interesting long-term implications in terms of constitutional law in the States, freedom of speech. I call it the Rooi Gevaar because, I mean, we as South Africans understand that, from the apartheid era where the
Yeah,
Rooi
sure.
Gevaar, the danger of communism, was shoved down our throats. And this we've seen this rise in the from 2020, quite frankly, this anti-China feeling that is rising really quite aggressively in the West. And this dichotomy is really becoming more and more noticeable.
It's one thing for the dichotomy to become more noticeable. That's one thing. It's a whole different thing for the Americans to almost to say to a competitor that is now operating on their borders, listen, I'm sorry, but you can't compete here anymore for whatever reason, because we think you're a national security threat. And therefore, the only way that we are going to allow you to continue to operate here is to sell to make sure that you're owned by an American parent. And that almost goes against the normal norms of free trade, free thinking, which has really been what the American dream was built upon, right? It just happened to be a Chinese company that has a product that a lot of people use and, quite frankly, make money out of. The people that also use it are mostly younger people, which surely the Democrats and, quite frankly, the Republicans would want as voters. If you now take away TikTok, I don't know how popular that's going to be.
I mean, at the end of the day, and I mean, I find social media absolutely fascinating, particularly from a marketing perspective and how they each have their own niches, and that's how that's developed over time. But what TikTok does, in effect, is not much different to what happens on Instagram or Facebook, for that matter. Just the algorithms that drive Facebook and Instagram, owned by the same company, obviously, are really light years behind TikTok. That TikTok algorithm is scary, how good it is. And it's quite clear the Americans, want that algorithm. I think the latest was Steve Mnuchin, who's one of Trump's little stooges, has said, oh, he's going to buy it, right? Look, the Chinese are not going to sell it. They're not going to give up that algorithm.
No.
They would rather actually just leave the States completely. But I don't think it'll come to that.
I mean, this is the problem, is that the Americans very well could be falling foul of their own ideology by doing something like this without and sitting in the background saying, well, it really is about national security, but is it really about national security? This is the fine line, as you rightly point out, Dawn. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, especially an election year and a year where there's a lot going on across the world, with Russia and Ukraine, the Israelis in, the Israeli problem that's busy playing itself out in Palestine at the moment, which is really the Gaza Strip at the moment. You've got all of that happening, and then you have this economic war happening between the Chinese and the Americans. And look, let's face it, as you said, the Chinese aren't going to give it up. They're just going to stay stum probably on the whole issue.
I mean, bottom line in America, it comes down to, I think it's the Second Amendment. It's the freedom of speech, and it
Yes.
goes
Yeah.
completely. It's not like the banning of Huawei cell technology that happened, which was also
Yeah.
banned for being a security risk. That you can understand. But I think what the American politicians perhaps don't understand, and I mean, I've caught snippets of the, there was a Senate House Committee review of this. They grilled the CEO and until he was blue in his face, and you know, he tried to explain to them that Singapore is not China, but at the same time he would not be drawn on the fact that obviously it's owned by the effectively owned by the CCP. But at the end of the day, they don't understand that, I mean, 170 million American users.
Yeah.
That's half the population. American
No,
population is
it's a lot
circa
of people.
50 million people. That's a
Yeah.
lot of people. It's a lot of voters, right? And
Sure.
7 million small businesses. 7 million small businesses. Now, it's one thing to stop people having their little, you know, going down the TikTok rabbit hole, and quite another when you say to those 7 million people who've been earned a good living from TikTok, either using TikTok Shop or being in their creator fund, sorry for you, especially if they're
Yeah,
voters.
can't use it anymore. Sorry,
Yeah.
you know.
No,
I think
which is,
there'll be riots, Dawn. There'll be riots in the streets. I
you know,
think.
which
I
is why
mean,
I
that's
think Biden, look, shame man, he should be in an old age home, but at the end of the day, you know, he's the only person that's going to beat Trump. You know, these two old
Yeah.
guys are, you know, it's like who's going to give who a heart attack first kind of thing.
Yeah.
But for Biden to go, you know, on the side, because he says if it comes on his desk, he's going to sign it. You know, he's not getting the right advice here. Kamala Harris needs to sort of whisper in his the ear that he can hear
Yeah.
after, you know, or turn up his hearing aid. I'm being really mean, but
Yeah.
really,
But look,
you know,
it's
these
the
two old
state,
men duking it out, it's
it's
like.
this it it's the state of the American political race. It's about money and about power, more so than it is about people with energy and with good ideas being able to drive the country forward. And believe me, if I looked at both Democrats and Republicans, there were some younger candidates with some really good ideas that I thought could spend a lot more energy driving the country forward. They know it. Why? It's really about money at the end of the day, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's really sad, you know. I think, as I said, I'd much rather be, you know, with all our problems that we have here, I'm actually quite happy to sit this side of the pond, Kobe.
That's it. The side of the pond's much better. Well, that's all for the week, folks. This podcast is based on our weekly free newsletter, which you can subscribe to at rexalom.co.za.
All our blogs and newsletters are also available on rexlom.co.za. Or wealthecology.co.za, and we welcome any suggestions for future topics. Thank you for lending us your ears.